Hello and welcome. I'm Susie Jones. It is Your Money. And if you have any financial question for today's guest, you can call this number 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It is 1-888-6-ADVICE. And you can always email your questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. And certainly you can call or text us right now at 651-461-9226. Now, here is Senior Vice President and Financial Advisor Peg Webb and the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group and Financial Advisor Bruce Helmer. Welcome to both of you.
Good morning, Susie. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning, Peg. Good morning, Susie Jones. And ladies, happy Mother's Day. And listeners, moms out there, if you're listening to us today, it's either Mother's Day or close to it, probably. I know not everybody listens to the broadcast live. Some of you pick it up later. But I say this every year, and it's not my line. I stole it from somebody years ago, but I just think it's true, and it's poignant, and it's powerful. Somebody smarter than I am once said that God's greatest gift to mankind is mom. And which of us doesn't appreciate our mom? So happy Mother's Day to everybody. And Peg, in kind of going along with Mother's Day, our topic today is women in wealth. And I know you did a podcast earlier this week. I know we did a show recently where Jackie Ampey came on the show and we talked about women in financial planning. But we're going to come at it a little bit differently today. We're going to come at it from the standpoint of talking about financial planning and connecting to core values and what's important to us. And again, it just seems relevant on this Mother's Day. Peg?
Yes, yes. And happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there. It is our special day. So make sure you enjoy it. So when it comes to values, and when it comes to women, when I talk about those two words in the same sentence, I just wanted to make a comment about, you know, how do you possibly align, you know, how you think day to day when it comes to your money? And, you know, when I think about this, women are better at planning. Bruce, this is, I might be a little bit, sided on the fact that women are better planners, but women's brains are more active than men when it comes to a certain prefrontal cortex, which is associated with your impulse control, your emotions, and planning for the future. So all that being said, women just tend to look out a little bit further in the day-to-day. And I think that's just because, you know, a lot of times women have so many things on their plate that they're just have such a long list of things that they want to get done. Now, I'm going to tie this back to what Bruce just mentioned is values and values-based planning. Well, historically, investing and retirement planning has been especially challenging for women. Number one, and I go way back, right, decades, it was traditional that most of the clients that I had that I talked to, you know, directly, and if there was a couple, I'm talking to the male. I'm talking to the guy in the family because that's the role. And there's nothing wrong with splitting up roles, right, because there's always a lot to do. So if the man of the couple says, oh, I'll handle this, you handle that. That was very common. Not so much anymore because women became in the workforce dramatically and started to figure out, oh, well, maybe I should control some of my money. There's just a little point here is, yes, we did do a show about a month ago about women and investing, and there's still some challenges, you know, career interruptions, having children, wage disparity, that's still there, and that's still kind of front and foremost in the news. But what I wanted to do, Bruce, is just not so much talk about statistics of women, but how women tend to plan with their values, more of a holistic approach, which in my mind, I would define as a very calming experience. And what do I mean by that? The first question we ask is, what's important to you? Now, not just to women, we do this with men too, but what's important to you? And they'll look at you sometimes and say, what is she talking about? Why is that? And I say, well, it's not just about money, just in life, what's important to you? Bruce?
Yeah, and Peg, I like where you're going with this too, because maybe some listeners would object to the idea, and I think, not to put words in your mouth, but you're not saying one is better than the other. Men and women are different, but equal. We're not saying one is better than the other, but to your point that women are better planners, I think, again, I may be painting with kind of a broad brush here, but I think it's basically true, and I think there's statistical data that would back this up. Women are more, I think, willing to take advice and to consult an expert, whereas a man might say, I don't need to talk to anybody. I know what to do. I used to always use the example, although it's very dated now because we all have a smartphone and the phone tells us where to go. But I always used to use the example that if a man and a woman or a husband and a wife are driving and they're lost, the woman's going to be the one to say, let's pull over and ask for help or get directions from somebody. And the man will stubbornly insist that he's not lost and he'll figure out where he's going. So I think that you're right and you're on to something. And you're also correct, Peg, that this values exercise, again, we're emphasizing it today, and I think it makes sense to do so on Mother's Day. But we do this all the time, and we do this with all clients. It's not just women. It's not just moms. And the reason we do it is because the planning that we do ultimately does come back to financial things. But what we do with our money, or what we want to do with our money, is going to be so much driven by our goals and our objectives and what we want to do in life. And to determine what we want to do in life, we have to determine what's important to us, what matters. And I've never understood, it exists all over the place, but I've never understood how people can get financial advice or how someone in our industry can give financial advice just broadly, just generic, without knowing the client, without knowing what makes them tick, without knowing what's important. So this core values is critical, I think, to successful financial planning. And I don't think you said this yet, Peg, but as advisors, we put ourselves through this experience before we ever do it with clients. So we've walked down this road. We know when we're talking to a client about it, of which we speak, to the extent that we've done this ourselves also. Peg?
Yes, Bruce, and this is so long ago that you and I went through this exercise, and it was actually eye-opening for me. I mean, I'm talking about 15 or more years ago, where we sat down and said, okay, what's important to us? So I'll share a couple of my values. One is health. So we talk about this sometimes on January 1st, where, you know, everybody goes to the gym and they're like, okay, this year, this is my goal. Well, values are something that you live and breathe every day, right? So health to me is really important. So what does that really mean? Well, eat well and exercise and do what you can. But part of that value is because I want to be here a long time on this earth. And I actually want to enjoy my family. This is another one of my values, my family. And I'm talking about my extended family, not just my kids and my, you know, grandkids and that kind of thing. Just reaching out to family, it's really important to me. And then usually we pick five with clients and go into kind of a deeper dive of these are your highlighted values, what's important to you. And the rest of mine are integrity. I mean, if you can do something like this career with ethics and honesty, and that's what most advisors do. But to me, integrity in life is everything. And then teamwork. And then my last value, Bruce, is wealth. Wealth is something that I would be so proud if I was able to one day leave this earth and give, you know, to a lot of individuals and charities. And I feel like, you know, creating wealth is not just for yourself. It can actually do something for a lot of people and, you know, the world. Bruce?
Peg, I find it interesting how much we have in common in terms of our core values. And I probably knew this at one point, but I didn't remember exactly. I knew we had some in common. So I also have health and family and integrity on my five. And then I have loyalty and meaningful work. So you and I are pretty closely aligned. And I don't think that's a surprise based on doing what we do. And, you know, when I mentor younger advisors, okay, so let's be honest. And you mentioned one of your core values is wealth. And people that come to us want to have financial success and they want to retire and be able to enjoy the lifestyle that they want and not run out of money. So let's not duck the elephant in the room here. We are talking about money. But when I coach or mentor younger advisors, I try to convey to them, don't focus on yourself and how much money you can make in this industry. Focus on exceeding your clients' expectations, delighting your clients, and if you do that, you will be financially successful. And maybe it's a bad analogy, but you know, you look at, you know, some professional athletes and you say that, well, they're wealthy, and that might be true, but I don't think being wealthy was the goal. Being, you know, Tiger Woods being the best golfer. Being the best golfer was the goal. The wealth kind of came along with it. And I think that's true in a lot of fields. And I think it's certainly true in our world, that if you're an advisor that always does the best you can for your clients, you're going to be successful in this business and financial success will follow. And I think that's so often true. But again, it comes down to core values, doing the right thing for the right reason. And again, this is so important as in the overall comprehensive financial planning process. Peg?
Yeah, it's interesting, too. Some statistics are not necessarily just within Wealth Enhancement Group, but collectively everywhere. 95% of women rank helping others as one of their important values. And another kind of impactful one was 90% reported with this survey, environmental responsibility. So those are just two examples of, I want to know that as an advisor. I want to know what is so ingrained in you that you believe is the most important. Not talking about what stock or bond or what you're going to do with your money. First, we need a basis for a start so that we can align, you know, your investments with your value. So one of the things that Wealth Enhancement Group has done, and we've had a relationship for decades of time now, is a company called Think to Perform. And it's a leadership consulting company that we actually, we hire Doug Lenick. He's been on our show several times, but he has a kind of an easy way to go through that value exercise. And it's like a deck of cards, and each card has a value listed on it. And so my husband and I did this together where we went through the cards. We said, okay, that's important to me. That's important. Well, there's 52 cards. And, well, what you do is you say, that's not me. You make two piles, you know, and then you say, oh, this one resonates. This is the one, like health and family, et cetera. So there's an easy way to kind of go through that exercise. We use that sometimes, the cards, because it's sometimes hard, right, Bruce? To get people to open up and talk about that, they're kind of, especially the male side is going, what does this have to do with, you know, my financial plan or my retirement plan? Well, it's everything. And once we talk to people about it, they go, of course that makes sense. You know, we need to know what's important to you when it comes to your money. How are you going to generate sustainable income for life? And then your values are telling you, what do you want to do with your money? Like, do you want to have two homes? You know, it's kind of your vision, but just condensed into maybe just five things that are really important to you that are your values. Bruce?
So a couple things really quick, just in case listeners might be interested. So Doug Lenick and I go back together a lot of years. We knew of each other reputation-wise. Doug had done some great things in the industry, and he knew of me for whatever reason. But we found ourselves on the same board. We both went to the University of Minnesota Morris, and we met on a chancellor's advisory board And that's when we first got acquainted and became friends and business colleagues. And full disclosure, some listeners know, Doug and I are business partners in a couple different things, including the Chanhassen Dinner Theater we acquired in 2010. So I think it's fair that listeners know that I have that personal relationship with Doug, but the professional relationship of understanding core values, that had nothing to do with our friendship. He didn't get the gig because we were buddies. He got the gig because he's so good at what he does. And those that remember Doug being on the show from time to time know how good he is. But the other thing I wanted to mention, Peg, is, again, we've been focusing on these values. I want to kind of segue into why it matters. And I think the reason it matters is because I want people to tell me what they want their life to be like, what they want their retirement to be like. That you use your values, you use what's important to you to set your goals. And those goals are going to mean everything in terms of the advice that I give on how to get people to where they want to be. So this does come full circle to do a good job and devising a plan to get to where you want to be and advising clients on how to get to where they want to be, it starts by this self-reflection. And you said it. Sometimes I've had people that can tell me when I ask them their goals or ask them their core values, what's important to them. Other times I get the deer in the headlights look and they don't know what I'm talking about. And then we kind of have to lead them there. Right, Peg?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And sometimes it's what this isn't why I came here. But then by the end of the session, when we're talking about your values and kind of pulling it out from each one individually, at the end, it's an aha moment. They're just saying, how could I possibly think you could create a financial plan if you didn't know all these things and then incorporate those values into your financial plan for the rest of your life? Bruce?
Yeah. I'm just keeping an eye on the clock on the wall, and I know in the second segment we will definitely get listeners involved. We've got probably 3 minutes or so left, Peg. What else do you want to make sure that we share with listeners in terms of key takeaways? Again, for most people listening, it's Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day, and we're talking about women and wealth. We're talking about core values. We're talking about goal setting. And again, it seems particularly appropriate on this Mother's Day, but this is always true, not just for women, not just for mom. This is kind of standard operating procedure at Wealth Enhancement. But what other key takeaways, Peg, do you think we should share with listeners before we go to break?
Well, women seek to learn. I can tell you that they are in the forefront of, you know, attending the webinars that we have. They're reading about things. They want to be knowledgeable. And I'm finding over the decades of time, Bruce, that I've done this job, that the enhancement, if you will, or the just the level of knowledge that women have when they come in and see us for the first time is just a thousandfold. So thank you, all the women out there, for going to seek to learn, because I think that there's a much more probability for success for all of your retirement and legacy, because legacy is a big thing with women too, legacy to your family. And so I appreciate all the work that they're doing to get up to speed and knowledgeable. Bruce?
Yeah, and taking that baton from you and running a little bit further, I don't want to oversimplify this, but I've seen a change over the years, Peg. You know, I've been doing this over 40 years, and even 10 or 15 years ago, I feel like the vast majority of couples or partners or married folks that came in, the male was kind of the financial part of the partnership, and the female, you know, deferred to the male. And I've really seen that change now in recent years, where they're on equal footing, or in many cases, the male is deferring to the female. He's saying, I don't care about the money. She's the CFO of the family. And so that change for me has actually been really refreshing. But again, it is different than what it was years ago. And again, I can't emphasize this enough, that if you listen, if you're listening right now and you personally don't know what your goals are and don't know what your core values are, Think about that. Think about what's important to you. Think about what you want your retirement to look like. Where do you want to live? Do you want to help kids and grandkids? Do you want to give to charity? Do you want to volunteer? Do you want a second home? Do you want to travel? What matters to you? And then the last thing, Peg, is men and women are different, and sometimes they don't have the same goals and values and objectives. And then it's our job to find common ground or compromise or find a plan that's satisfying to both of them if they're not completely in agreement or alignment. And again, that's doable and it's possible, but it's our job to understand that. And Susie, I know we're about out of time for the first half. We'll tie a bow on this subject, and we'll let listeners drive most of the second half of the show.
That's right. Let's remind people, if they have a question right now for Bruce or for Peg on this Mother's Day, 651-461-9226. Again, 651-461-9226. We're already getting some questions in. We'll get to all of those on Your Money with the Wealth Enhancement Group, 651-461-9226. You can call or you can text us with your question for Bruce or Peg. And welcome back to the second half of It's Your Money. I'm Susie Jones, reminding you, if you have a financial question for our guests, you can call 1-888-6-ADVICE or email questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. But for the next 25 minutes, we invite you to call us here or text us at 651-461-9226. I'll say it once again, 651-461-9226. Here once again, Peg Webb and Bruce Helmer. Welcome back to both of you guys.
Thank you, Susie Jones. Thank you, listeners, for hanging in there. Happy Mother's Day, Susie. Happy Mother's Day, Peg. Happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there. If you joined us late on this Mother's Day or near this Mother's Day, depending upon when you're listening to us, we've been talking about women and wealth, and we've been talking specifically about recognizing your core values, what's important to you, and then using that information to set logical goals for your life. What do you want to achieve? What do you want to accomplish? How do you want to live? And then when we know those things, when we know what makes our client tick, we can devise a plan to get you where you want to be. That's where, you know, the financial part of this comes in. But I've never understood, I said in the first half of the show, how people in our industry, in the financial services industry, can advise clients when they don't know very much about them as people. That's critical to me in terms of the advice that we're going to give. And Peg, quick question for you before we get listeners involved. And by the way, listeners, it does not have to be on this topic. We'll field any and all financial questions that you have today in the second half of the show. So if you have something else that you've been thinking about, Roth IRAs or company retirement plans or whatever, it does not have to be on core values. We'll take any and all question. Peg, before we went to break, I mentioned just really quickly and didn't really get a chance to elaborate, but I know you see this from time to time also. You're meeting with your clients and they're partnered or married to get there together, and they don't share the same core values. They don't share the same vision of what they want life to be like. How, as an advisor, how do you deal with that when you encounter that?
Yeah, thank you, Bruce. It makes it a little more difficult, there's no question. But what I learned early on at Wealth Enhancer Group 25 plus years ago is a suggestion by one of the original partners, Jerry Bernard. And his suggestion was, when you have the couple sitting at your table, you know, or now we're on Zoom a lot of times, you ask them if it would be okay if you would just put a wall between them, like just, you know, as if they're on different sides of the wall. And because in the beginning, when I first started as a financial advisor, one did more of the talking than the other. And when that happens, I always kind of questioned whether that one person is fairly representing, you know, both people. And a lot of times it was the guy doing the talking. And because, and quite frankly, because they were the ones that were maybe managing the money for the family, that kind of thing. But when I started asking questions of what's important to you, you know, then it was still kind of one-sided. So this wall idea actually really worked. I said, would you be willing to allow me to put a wall between you right now and then specifically just ask questions to each of you independently? Basically, they were the same questions, but the answers were a little bit different. And ultimately, Bruce, they loved that at the end because day to day, you really don't sit down as a family or a couple and say, okay, what's important to us? What are the high level things that you want to do, you know, and get done, you know, for yourselves or your family? And then knowing that as financial planners, that is just like a golden key that you opened up to be able to create a financial plan that both of their goals and values are incorporated into that plan. Bruce?
That's a really good answer. That's a really good way. I do something similar, but I really like the way you answered that. And again, I would tell everybody out there, if you haven't done this mental exercise or talk to each other, you know, do that before you come and see a financial advisor, because it probably makes the first meeting a little more productive if we don't have to drag you there before you come to the first meeting. Susie, let's get listeners involved. In fact, let's let them drive the show the rest of the way.
All right, very good. Let's remind people you are listening to Your Money, and the topic is wide open. We're talking about Mother's Day and women and money, but as Bruce said, we open it up to all questions for the next 20 minutes or so. 651-461-9226. A texter writes, could you please explain how capital gains work? Do I need to account how much I improved my home over 41.5 years of ownership? I am a widow, and I raised my three children there, and I've recently sold it. Thank you. Capital gains.
That's a great first question. Peg, before I'll let you go first, but I want to give this a little bit more context. So I have been finding both in individual meetings and in public speaking events, if we can just elaborate a little bit more on the texter's question, I think a lot of people are, I'm getting the question a lot about taxes when they sell a home and having to pay taxes on the gain of the home. Now, this texter talked about capital gains taxes, and we can answer that question and talk about how capital gains and ordinary income taxes are different. But Peg, I think maybe where they were kind of heading, and it's a question I get frequently, and it surprises me that people aren't as aware of this as we are. Talk a little bit about the taxes or the lack of taxes on selling your home.
Yeah, we actually are getting this question a lot more, and it's kind of this downsizing that many people are doing. And so let's say you bought a house, I mean, it could be 25 years ago, and you paid $100,000 for that house. Well, and this is a aha moment to people. They're like, what? I have to pay tax on that? And let's just pretend that house now is worth $500,000. I mean, recently, real estate has really gone up, but let's just say it's $500,000. Well, the IRS wants their fair share, but one step you have to take first is it's maybe easy to remember what you paid for it $100,000 years and years ago, but then you also add in any improvements. So not necessarily day-to-day upkeep, but many people have, you know, improved their windows, improved their roof, maybe made an addition on the house, maybe added another garage. All of those things, the cost of those things get added to that $100,000. The rule in place today is that when you sell your house, if it as a single person, and that's what the listener seems to be single, is that you get $250,000 that doesn't have any capital gains on your house. So let's take that $100,000 that you put in, and let's say you have $200,000 of improvements over 25 years. Now you're at $300,000, and you're selling your house for $500. Well, you get $250 tax-free. So in that case, there would be no taxes for selling your home. If you're a married couple filing jointly, that $250 turns into $500,000. Now, in many states, like the state that I was born in, Minnesota, they actually, the value of the houses, believe it or not, haven't gone up like the East Coast, West Coast. Well, let's say California, right? Part of the reason that they came up with this law is because people were buying houses for $100,000 and then they were worth $2 million. I mean, the values were just skyrocketing. Well, in this case, on the coast, the IRS was gathering a lot more tax money because people were changing houses more frequently. Us Midwesterners tend to buy our house, live in it for a long time. But that is the, Bruce, that is the current rule. So you get $250 as a single person and $500,000 as a joint filing couple. And I always encourage my client, because it's a lot of work for people, right? They didn't keep track of all their things that they did as improvements. But I highly suggest that they go back to their get receipts and some documentation so that they can prove that the basis or the value of their home has gone up partially by improvements. Bruce?
Yeah, and I think the key point there, Peg, is not just how much of a gain you get to achieve without it being taxable, but also that you add to your basis with all those improvements. Again, I've had several meetings before with people that said, well, I paid $300,000 and now I could sell it for $450,000. Okay, that's $150,000 again, not a taxable event. But I also can say, what did you do over the years to your home? Oh, we put in a new air conditioning, or we reshingled. All those things add to the cost, so the basis is really higher than just the $300,000 that they initially paid. So again, I seldom, Peg, I won't say never, but I would say very seldom have I had a client sell a home where they've actually had enough gain that they have to even worry about any tax consequences. And then the other part of that that I don't think we hit on is the difference between capital gains taxes and ordinary income taxes. So to get capital gains treatment on something, let's go away from a home and let's assume it's a stock or a mutual fund or something, and you're going to sell it for more than you bought it for. First of all, to get capital gains treatment, you have to have held it for at least 12 months. And then if you sell it for more than you paid for it and you're eligible for capital gains taxes, that rate is typically going to be lower than your ordinary income tax rate. So maybe on your paycheck and all of your other sources of income, maybe you find yourself in a 22% federal tax bracket. But if I sell an appreciated asset, my capital gains rate might only be 10 or 15% as opposed to 22%. So that's the difference for the texter and for all listeners between capital gains taxes and just ordinary income taxes. And again, as Peg so well explained, most of the time, at least here in the Midwest, when you sell your home, you probably aren't going to have any tax consequence whatsoever, because most people are not going to have enough gain that they even have to worry about paying tax. And the other thing, Peg, there seems to be a prevalent understanding out there that in order to avoid any taxes, if they sell a property, they have to put the proceeds back into another property. That doesn't matter at all. If you sell your house and you invest it or spend it or whatever, it doesn't matter. It just comes back to, on a single filer, is the gain $250,000 or less? Or a married couple filing jointly, is it $500,000 or less? What you do with those proceeds does not enter into the equation at all as to whether or not you have to pay taxes on the sale of your home. Susie?
651-461-9226. Again, it is 651-461-9226. If you are listening and you have a question for Bruce or Peg about anything, but obviously taxes are something that everybody is thinking about, a little bit worried about. In fact, this person writes, if I inherited $300,000, how much of it would go to taxes? How much would be taken out for taxes on a $300,000 inheritance? Bruce, Peg?
Hey, Susie, thank you. So, Peg, I think we can take a crack at answering this, but obviously there's some information that we don't know to be able to be specific, because where is that $300,000, right? Is it in a taxable account? Is it in a tax-deferred account? Is it in a Roth IRA? Peg, explain why it matters in terms of where that $300,000 is in terms of the tax consequence for who's ever inheriting.
I'm glad you brought that up, Bruce, because it could be real estate. It could be gold. It could be, you know, what did you inherit? So $300,000, that particular number doesn't necessarily matter. It matters what the holding is. So let's give a couple of examples. Let's say the person that you inherited the money from happened to buy Apple stock, you know, 20 years ago or something, and they paid $1 a share, and now it's worth, let's just make this up, $1,000. I know it's a ton more than that. But so now you have $999 worth of growth in that one share. And the current rule is upon someone's death, that stock then would just step up to the value of the date of death. So then on that particular holding, there wouldn't be any capital gains. The second way that the person could have invested is they could have put money into an annuity. They could have taken after-tax money, put it into an annuity, and let's say here they put $50,000 into an annuity, and it doubled. It's now worth $100,000. Well, if it's an annuity, half of that $50,000 growth, would go to the beneficiary, and they would have to pay tax on that. Now, you have some time frame of when you have to take that out of the annuity. You could possibly do it over time. What we mostly see is traditional IRAs or 401ks or 403bs, those type of deferred plans, and the person that deceased, usually they haven't taken any, let's say they're taking distributions out, but there's a value in there where they've really never paid taxes. So somebody has to pay the IRS on those IRAs, and these are traditional IRAs. And in that case, you have some time of when you can take them out. Now, there's all sorts of new rules. It used to be you could take it out over your lifetime, and the IRS got keen to that and said, wait a minute, we want to collect our revenue much earlier than that. So then you have Roth IRAs, which Roth IRAs are after-tax accounts. There's no tax that you have to pay, but there is mandatory rules that you take out some of that Roth IRA money. The IRS recently said, wait a minute, we don't want these Roth IRAs to be in existence and be like a Rockefeller account one day where they're just rolling, rolling, rolling them, and it's all this tax-free growth. So they came up with a plan that you have, as a beneficiary, 10 years to get that money out. And then when it comes to real estate, also, there's, you know, if you inherit this property, then this $250,000 that we talked about earlier and the $500,000 that we talked about earlier on real estate, that should be tax-free. And then depending on if it was their existing house or if it was a second home, you know, then it's really in the investment category. So, Bruce, I hate to go on and on and on, but it depends. It depends on what type of asset you're inheriting, and then there's an individual rule as far as taxes on that particular asset. Bruce?
Yeah, and I'll expand just a little bit. That was a great answer, Peg. But where I want to expand, and this can be a whole other show another day and probably will be, we talk a lot about tax diversification, and so there's only three ways investments can be treated from a tax standpoint, right? Fully and immediately taxable, tax deferred, or tax advantaged. And as you and I talk about all the time, Peg, people gravitate towards tax deferred and tax advantage. They don't want taxable because they don't want to pay taxes. We're a society that looks for immediate gratification, and I don't want to put my money somewhere where I have to pay taxes on it every year. So I do traditional IRAs, Roth IRAs, 401ks, Roth 401ks, and so on. But taxable is not a dirty word. It's not necessarily a bad thing. Taxable investments have certain advantages. Like you mentioned, the step up in basis. You might be able to get long-term capital gains rates instead of ordinary income tax rates. And liquidity, you know, if I'm a 35-year-old person, you know, just getting going in life, and I haven't gotten married yet, and I have to pay for a wedding, and I haven't bought a house yet, and I have to pay for a house, if all my money is in a traditional IRA or traditional 401k, and I don't have access to it till I'm 59 and a half years old, you know, I can't use any of that retirement plan money for my day-to-day living needs now. So taxable accounts give people liquidity. So I'm not suggesting you should put all your money in a taxable account. I am suggesting you shouldn't avoid it completely. We want tax diversification. We want exposure in all three tax categories. And then I want to get this in quick also, Susie. I'm sorry, but Peg, it just occurred to me, based on our topic today and the couple of questions that we had, one of the questions I seem to be getting a lot lately, or a variation of, is how much do I need to retire? Sometimes people say a specific amount. Do I need $1 million? Do I need $500,000? But I'm going to kind of put them all together. But I've gotten that variations of that question a lot recently. And how much do you tell people, how much do they need to retire? And I think we've only got about a minute and a half.
Yeah, that's a great question, because it's kind of like you got to have $1 million, you know, to live the life you want to live. Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because we just talked about the values, the core values of our clients. What is their vision? What's their goal? What's their lifestyle expense? I mean, I've got clients that actually, you know, live on $2,000 a month, and I've got clients that need $250,000 a month. So that's a huge variation. And so that magic number, I don't think there's a general magic number out there, because we're all, like you say, Bruce, we're all snowflakes. We're all different in our wishes and wants and what we've saved for retirement. And, you know, some clients are already gifting money that they want to give to their children now instead of holding on to it until they pass. So I don't think there's a general number, and I would seek advice. If you don't know what that number is for your family, then you probably should reach out to an advisor or somebody that would be knowledgeable to walk you through the process. Bruce?
Peg, that's a great answer. I can't improve upon that. Susie, I know we're getting close to being out of time anyway.
All right. Very good. Well, thanks, everyone, for listening. And we hope everyone has a very happy Mother's Day. And remember, you can go online and see the Retirement Planning for Women, 6 Critical Steps to a Confident Future. You can find that at wealthenhancement.com. You can email questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com if you did not get them answered today. And you can call this number anytime to get your questions answered, 1-888-6-ADVICE. Make it a great day.